so I sign up the whole, just about every shift. And I was signing him up. I had all the forms I was signing. And I didn't sign him up quietly or I'll run a sneak around the toilet. I just sign him up and let him look, you know. And so then one of the bosses, it wasn't Mr. Gurr, I forget his name now, the other one. He calls me up to his office. And one of the girls had taken, it was a busboy, she had gone and negotiated for herself for the same wages as the waitresses. And she did it alone because she needed more money. And I was hollering at her. I said, look, I said, that should be across the board. You can't. Well, she said, you're not going to get it. And he gave her a little more because he was nervous about all this union business. They're figuring out how to stop me, you see. So, no, how did I, did he call me up or did I go by myself? Oh, no, I went up by myself. That's how it was. So when they were saying, you can't get anything, and I said, well, get it, even if we haven't been ratified or certified, you got to. And I said, this, you know, and I couldn't explain to them about collective bargaining. So they said, I said, all right, it's a dumb job anyway, you know, who cares if they lose being a busboy. So I went down and I said, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to negotiate for wages for the busboys across the board for all three shifts. And I said, if I come down and put my apron on, we've got it. And if I come down and walk out the door, we haven't. So everybody's watching me. And I went up there and he was nervous. And he said, you know, Johnny, he said, you're smart enough to be a waitress. I said, look, I'm smart enough to run this restaurant if I had the money. So are a lot of people. He said, if I give it to you, I'll have to give it to everybody. I said, that's naturally, that's why I'm here. Anyway, everybody, you could look through the window downstairs and everybody had just stopped waiting. And he knew if I walked out, the whole crew were going behind me because it was sort of dramatic. Mm-hmm. And they kind of liked me, including the Chinese cooks. And because I called this poor Mary who just did it, sneaked around on herself, and the others never thought of it, some of them would, but they... So anyway, Matt, he says, it was during the war, he says, after this war, he says, they're going to be a lineup, and you'll be in that lineup. And I said, well, I said, if after the war, I said, there's no money, you'll be in that lineup too, because who's going to eat in your restaurant? And so we had this big fight. He says, all right, how much do you want? So I put it up. I said, I want equal to wages. And I said, I don't care if you put the plates to carry them on clean and full or take them out dirty. You know, man, he said, oh, you can be a waitress. We'll make you a waitress. I said, it doesn't make any difference to me whether I take the plates on full or bring them back dirty. Right. You know, I don't care. It's just a job. So anyway, I negotiated for some place around up in there anyway, and it made him sign up. So I came down and put my apron on, and I went like that. And then they knew. I said, now that's collective bargaining. That's right. That's when they signed up after that. The pie, I forget whether it was the pie or this that signed them up. Anyway, I signed up the whole damn thing. So then in the union, they said, you know, they needed an organizer out in them at the airport, but you have to work out there. And it's on shifts. And they asked me to take it. They said, we'll make up your wages. But I said, no, I couldn't, because I had my children. I had those little boys, and I just simply couldn't work. You know, an organizer is 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. You've got to go, and you've got to work. You can't just walk in from the outside. You've got to work with people.
Yeah.
They have to accept you. You have to be a part of somebody. That's why it was in the union. I was a part of them. Anyway, I went to San Francisco. My mother lived in, and I took my children with me to see my mother. It was quite sick, and I worked down there in the restaurant and had to rejoin down there. And I wrote back, and we lost it because in that 3 months, staff's turnover changes, you know. And then when I came back, I took a business course at Duffus. And what I did was, I didn't have any money, so I got a job. They let me work. They were pretty nice. And I think I took 3 months or 6 months. It wasn't too long, but I had to do it fast. And I got the job of marking the papers, unfortunately. But what I went was a job cleaning the desk, because you're out in the half, and I'm stuck with all these papers. It took me about 2 hours. Everybody else that did the cleaning up were out in about a half an hour, and they wouldn't give me a clean-up job. Anyway, I took it, and that worked for Vernager, and it was after that I was called into the IWA by Austin.
Right.
And after that, I worked in the lotteries hiring
office. Okay, right. So were you involved with the formation of the IWA Women's Auxiliary at all?
No. That was I wasn't even in it, because that was Wives of Lotteries and Workers.
Yeah.
Right. I did things with them and attended their stuff. In fact, I used to do their Titan for them, but I wasn't a member of it.
Right. Were the women workers in the auxiliary who worked in the
No. Well, they might have been. Some of them married to somebody could have been a worker, but actually it was a wives' organization. And women's auxiliary is very, very important. It's absolutely essential. And it hasn't the prestige you should have, because in any tribes, a man can fight as hard as his wife will fight. If his wife doesn't understand the issue and they got no money and she needs this and she's got kids there, you know, he's going to have to quit someplace. You can't hold out unless your wife will hold out. And I think a woman's auxiliary is one of the most essential things of any union, and it's more than a tea party. And even in the fishermen's union today, it's very small when it should be large. And just a few dedicated people, and they're very political in the fishermen's union. They're political on their resolutions, and they're political on their activities, but they have a hard time organizing those women. And actually, I myself think that it shouldn't be left that the men should help organize them. And any union that has a strong women's auxiliary, the men know in any strike situation or negotiation how important it is. One of those valuable parts of the union.
Yeah, in the IWA they did a lot of work.
At that time it was quite strong, but still never large. But they were highly political, and because of the leadership. Uh-huh. The leadership is left wing, it's the auxiliary will reflect it.
Right. I have a question about dues, which is, I was reading some stuff about the 30s and how some of the unions, which were predominantly women, asked to be able to pay lower dues and lower dues to the main labor bodies like the Trades and Labor Council and so on in order to be able to participate just because their wages were so low. And I wondered if in any of the unions you were involved in, the women paid different union dues than the men.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Nothing about it.
Oh, I'm interested. In that period of time that we've talked about, which is sort of the 40s essentially, were there women who were really predominant in the labor movement that you can sort of think of, who cropped up, and how were they seen by people?
Well, there were, but not as much as now. I know Emily and May were from their hotel and restaurant workers and attended the labor councils, and I know there were other women too, but they weren't that dominant yet. They were accepted all right, the ones that were in it.
Yeah.
But they weren't that prevalent. In the organizing, in the fishermen or the IWA, of course, the women, they were women shop stewards, and they were thoroughly accepted, and they were ahead of union, you know,
right.
And their and see, it was, oh God, I know her so well, I can't think of her name.
Eva?
No, in the IWA, she was in Local 217. She was one of the officials on the executive of Local 217. And I can't think of her name. I've known her for years. It's just slipping.
Hold on. I'll look up. I have people. Maybe she's... put it on. Mickey Beagle.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Mickey. Mickey was one of the first women organizers in the Fishermen's Union. And she also worked, she lived in the States during the war, and she was a shop steward and worked very strong in the union at that time in the States. And she's probably one of the most militant trade union women leaders there is in this province. And she's the one that they sent out into camps and on the boat. They sent around all the fish camps. And she organized, and she didn't just organize women. She organized.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a troubleshooter. And she could go in places, and they sent her on troubleshooting sometimes when no one else could handle it. Mickey could handle it. And for heaven's sakes, get an interview from her. She's one of the, probably the best and the most prominent trade union women leader we have in this province.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because she's someone who around four or five different people told me to see her.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Incredible. Like, she's very well known, and she sort of crops up everywhere.
Well, she's quite modest, and she probably thinks she never will. I interview me.
Yeah, she also is worried about being taped and having things misrepresented, which I really understand people's fear around that. Because
she actually did things, and she knows all those negotiations and all the fights the fishermen are always in. Now they're in the Combines Act, you know, they're trying to smash them up.
Yeah, I know people on the second. They're Vancouver.
See, my husband is the lawyer for them on that.
Right.
And
talking about women who were sort of prominent in that period of time. Were there any women who kind of or unions that posed quote, women's issues, you know, stuff like daycare and equal pay and equal work, particularly heavily, or did women mostly work around general union issues?
The women's auxiliaries did, and I think in unions like the fishermen and so on, they would back resolutions and send resolutions, but they didn't really work hard at it.
Right.
But they weren't against it.
Yeah.
But they would certainly, in the IWA or Fishermen's Union, any left-wing union would it would be on their agenda, and a resolution would go, and they'd back them up, but they didn't actually organize it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot done from the women's auxiliaries on it, too.
Right. Yeah, like the housewives.
They did it, and also, and there's, in fact, it's still on in the Fishermen's Union auxiliary, I think.
Right.
On their resolutions against, particularly this cutback.
Yeah.
On
the childcare.
Yeah.
Okay. Was maternity leave an issue at all?
I don't remember. Yeah. I think it must have been because we put everything we could think of.
Right. And did people do any work around protective legislation? Was that a question during the when you worked in the shipyards? Did women work night shifts or?
Oh yeah. Worked all shifts. Yeah.
Did you feel that were there women who were active? Like, one of the things that's become very clear to me in the process of doing this project is that a lot of the women who were really active were women who were left-wing women, like mostly from the Labour Progressive Party and some CCF women. And I wondered if that was pretty well the norm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you see that? Like, what was the relationship around those things?
Because those women were political enough to understand the issues.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of women that would agree with them that didn't belong to anything, but they wouldn't have taken the lead in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was usually women with some political understanding or some background that would take the lead.
And women got support for doing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of women agreed with them. It wasn't like they came on cold, but women who didn't have this sort of background wouldn't think of organizing or bringing it forward. So it was usually women that were quite highly politicized that would take the lead. They taught me a lot. I followed right in.
Okay, I guess the last kind of things are general stuff about you. I don't think I got it on tape, actually, but what kind of major changes do you see in the union movement since the Second World War? Also, if you could just sort of go through it and say if you think there were any major kinds of things that you learned or you think people learned during that period of time of, I guess, you know, the war period and that period of high activity that are important for people now, both, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I don't think I'm qualified to talk about the changes. They certainly, the unions have become... Mm-hmm. The internationals in particular have become more right-wing since that time. That's quite obvious.
Yeah.
And also that they're considered almost as job trusts, and they're certainly controlled too much from the top. And I think that's going to be a struggle within the union, eventually has to be. There are unions that aren't like the fishermen and the carpenters and the locals, you know, and so on. But that's my opinion anyway, that they become sort of monopolies, and that the young people in them don't have the understanding of the role or the power a trade union should have, and they certainly don't understand the terrible fight to build them. And I think that they're going to have to be a change in the trade union movement.
Yeah.
Political change.
Part of educational movement.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question was around equal pay and equal work and some of the issues around, you know, the acceptance of women into the unions. You feel, I guess, I think there seems to be some kind of real difference between the attitudes of the craft unions and the attitudes of the industrial unions.
Huh?
Oh,
you still in?
Yeah. We're almost done.
You don't have to tiptoe.
Oh.
What was the question? question.
Sorry. Differences between the attitudes of the craft unions and the industrial unions around.
Well, at that time, of course, it was like black and white.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it is today because I'm not around them.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, certainly the craft unions fought against women members and voting women members. They were pretty close. But the industrial unions were always, at that time, anyway, one equal paper, were the ones that promoted it.
Yeah.
There's not, they're kind of joined together since. I mean, it's
no, it's hard to distinguish.
Yeah, yeah.